I might have a problem because my computer's, all the other keys work, but F no longer works for me.
Did you pay your respects to a fallen soldier in Call of Duty? He's just so hard and just so fucking like energetically and repeatedly. Like you slapped the case of that coffin just over and over again. Like, that's my boy. That's my boy. That's my boy. That's my boy. That's my boy.
You think I was too respectful is the problem.
I think you paid your respects too hard to the fallen soldier. And I think you slapped the top of the coffin. And I think you did a little conga beat. And then I think you did start singing Cuban Pete in the middle of the funeral. And Russ, this is actually an intervention. You gotta fucking stop doing that, man.
I mean, some people like it. It depends on the scene.
One person has liked it. And it was Jim Carrey at his papa's funeral. He busted a gut. But you do it in video games, you do it in real life, and you need to fucking stop.
You know, I'm playing a numbers game at this point.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of 2007.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of 2007.
My name is Chris Plant, and I'm somewhere under the sea.
My name is Russ Frostick, and I know the best game of the sea.
Okay, oh, I like it. Welcome to the besties, where we celebrate the latest and greatest in interactive home entertainment. It is a Game of the Year show that goes... It's a game of the book. It's a book of the year show that is games for videos. But right now, we are taking a break from the latest new releases. There's so many passing us by that we are just willfully ignoring as we delve into 2007. So far, we've talked about Portal. We've talked about Modern Warfare. Those episodes are available for you to enjoy if you have not yet. But today, we are, as Mr. Plant alluded, headed under the sea for BioShock.
This one, more than the others we've done so far, probably gave me the most whiplash.
Huh.
Like, I feel like I had expectations for Portal, and Portal matched, like, was exactly what I expected. Call of Duty Modern Warfare was exactly what I expected. BioShock is maybe the first one of these that, while playing it, I was like, wow, shit. This is so much different than I remember it being.
Can you give a basic idea of what the game is? Because there are a lot of people who listen to our show who actually have not played the game.
Whoa. That is very
interesting. We are going to be spoiling, by the way. If you've not played BioShock.
It's very hard not to spoil BioShock, I feel like. Because there's like two things, I feel like, two facets of this game that you should know. The first is its lineage in like the System Shock sort of genre, which is to say the RPG shooter, which is so funny to talk about now because it's like everything is a fucking RPG shooter now. Like every game that comes out is the new Super Mario game is an RPG shooter. They all have schluter mechanics no matter what. But this game had a lineage in System Shock, which was a franchise that people really loved. By what was the studio that
Looking Glass?
Looking Glass.
Yes. Yeah.
It was a thinking person's first person shooter.
Yes. And it was, you know, that franchise was beloved. And so when BioShock came out, like there was a lot of heat behind it just for that. I feel like there was, because those games weren't just like, you know, cool because they had RPG mechanics and shooter mechanics. They also had like the dankest atmosphere and environmental storytelling, which is a term that you're probably going to be sick of by the end of this episode. That you know, there had been in games thus far. So when BioShock came out, like a lot of people were excited about it for that reason, but also because I feel like this was a capital P prestige game in the like the tone of it and the subject matter that it tackled. Rarely did you see games like really, really pile on a political message as firmly as BioShock did. And back in 2007, like I feel like it was huge for those reasons, because it was unlike, it was big and cool in ways that like games that were coming out back then did not sort of feel. And it is so wild to play that game 13 years later and it's not a knock against the game. It's more just like how things have changed, that like all of that stuff feels so dated, like so crazy dated and played out at this point.
At the time, sorry, Russ, you were about to say.
No, I was going to say, do we need to like even like set
it up?
Say
what the game is. Okay. Yeah, I'll just a little bit more. So what Griffin's talking about is the game is in conversation with a single book. It is in conversation with The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand. I mean, it gets into all Randian objectivism and there's other things, but really, like, that's why it felt prestige. Because maybe for the first time, a big AAA game was like, here's a book, and we're going to have a conversation about it through the lens of a video game. So there is a world under the ocean, not a world, a city under the ocean, built by a Randian objectivist named Andrew Ryan, and he has allowed all of his best pals to do really whatever the hell they want, because this is a libertarian paradise. And that means people are gene splicing and you can change your race or your gender, as they shout from the speakers at the very beginning of the game. Or you can, I mean, effectively, you can do literally whatever you want. There's no law. There's only a free market.
The most transgressive art imaginable,
which is just a lot of dead bodies.
Yeah, it's like if we jump through your headphones right now and stabbed you in the brain, and we're like, podcast art. Yes. That's about the level they're acting on.
So you go from one place to the next, engaging with the different, I would say, kind of like businesses or artistic venues that exist in this thing. So dealing with like, what does medicine look like in this? Mm-hmm. Here's a hospital level. What does commerce look like? Here's effectively a mall. What does art look like? Okay, here is a theater artist. And those people end up being boss fights. and that is like the story of the game. We'll obviously get into it way more.
Other things that sort of at the time felt very novel. One, I think why this made such a big impact at the time. One, aesthetically, games didn't look like this.
Still don't.
I would argue.
Yeah.
It is this hybrid of like Art Deco and steampunk, I would say, if that sounds fair. Mm-hmm. And it is an aesthetic the games don't have. And it's sort of an aspirational aesthetic where a lot of games at that time weren't reaching for it. It was, you know, you were very much playing in the aesthetics of film and TV and
this is a military base, or this is a science laboratory, whatever, like generic things.
The other thing that was massive and that I'd like to address specifically is environmental storytelling. And that is something that is so ripe in this game. And I feel like inspired so many games. I mean, for the next decade, really set the standard for environmental storytelling. So many rooms that you walk into have a story in them that is not laid out for you, but is there in the room if you are willing to like poke around and look for it. What I think personally is really interesting about that specifically, and a lot of the tone, honestly, I think the aesthetics too, was inspired by a show called Sleep No More, which I'm not going to get off on a tangent about, but Sleep No More is a small tangent about. Thank you, Griffin. Correct. It is an immersive theater production that was initially in Boston, where I believe Ken Levine saw it there, from what I understand. And it is very much about going into a room and having the story sort of like you absorb it through osmosis. You're looking at things and trying to piece together the story that way. Between that and like, especially there's a lot of like Hitchcockian music cues in Sleep No More that are used pretty frequently. And I feel like you see some of those in Bioshock, and I think some of the aesthetics and stuff. When I went and saw Sleep No More for the first time in New York, it was after I'd seen I played Bioshock, obviously, and it really clicked. It's not copying; it's like a real actual like influence, like artistic influence that you can really feel if you've seen the show. But yeah, environmental storytelling.
Audio logs, I feel like, were... I don't think this was the first game to have audio logs in them, but this was the game that when every game
that
after
made
had
it,
audio
made it
logs...
legally mandated.
Mandated, yeah. I think it was the first one maybe that had audio logs where you could just hold down the A button as soon as you pick it up and it would automatically play it while you do other shit. And that was enough for me to be like, oh, now I'll actually listen to these because I don't have to like hop into some fucking menu and like read and sit there and just have the story done to me. it can be a like component of the gameplay, like reloading a gun. Like it's that, yeah. It is that integrated.
So I know we've talked, there's a lot to like go over specifically about like the dated nature of it and stuff like that, but I did want to talk just briefly about the like first 20 minutes of the game for a second.
Okay. Yeah.
That's probably what gave me the most whiplash is the first 20 minutes.
So that's interesting. I don't know what you mean by whiplash, but just to sort of like break it down, the first 20 minutes, again, if you played the game, will be very familiar to you. You start off in a plane. The plane crashes. You wake up under the water and you swim to the surface. And there's this lighthouse, and you go into the lighthouse, and you're basically just slowly introduced to this world of BioShock through like a slide projector and Rapture through like a slide projector, and you know, you float through in this bathysphere, and there's whales and shit and skyscrapers and stuff like that. I think as an introduction, it's still fucking spectacular. I think it's really, really good. I think the only like beginning intro that like stands out to me that is on par is BioShock Infinite, which is a game that I didn't really like, but also has a fucking spectacular introduction that follows obviously a lot of the same tropes. But I'm trying to think, like, they're trying to introduce you to this very weird world that you've never seen before. And I think they do an amazingly good job of not even easing you into it. You're literally thrown into it. But it,
I think that's,
like,
I think
that's what works that's, about it.
But that, I my only hang up with that is that this time around, for whatever reason, like, it seemed so rushed. It seemed so rushed and so hurried.
Huh.
You're in a plane crash. You swim to the surface. There's a lighthouse right there. You walk in the front door, and then it's just like the lights turn on, and it's like they're having a libertarian surprise birthday party for you. And you get in this bathysphere, and then there's some dude like, the government wants to take all your milk or some shit. And it's like, what the fuck is going on? It's like, I built this incredible undersea city, and I wanted to be like, for whatever reason, this is the first time that it seemed absurd to me that I was like, I was just in a fucking plane crash. Did we crash into your shitty lighthouse in the middle of the ocean? It shouldn't be there for some reason.
This is addressed in the end of the game.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the, that
I
is
know,
the hook.
I know exactly why it happens. Like, there's a capital P plot reason for it, but like, it seemed just so, now murder this guy, okay.
But yeah, again, that's like the whole, that's the whole point. But B, I would also say, like, I think a lot of it has to do with like your prior knowledge of this world. So like, I remember when I was first playing it, I was at a preview event at like some random place in New York City, and I knew very, very little. And they let us play through the whole introduction and like the whole medical level and the, you know, that came after it. And I remember being like super overwhelmed, like, holy shit, like, I'm not even like following some of this stuff. There's so much that they're throwing at me. And now, because I know the whole arc and I've thought about this game for 10 years, it does feel somewhat old hat. But I do think that rushed nature actually works in the game's favor, because it does, for people that don't know anything, it doesn't let you absorb what's going on yet. You kind of have to do that over the course of many hours. So this is kind of like a slap in the face, and now you're like, oh, wow, this is weird, and now I'm going to jump in for real.
Okay, I'll get one thing, because I want to go back to something you said, and then obviously we can talk about the twist, because it's a whole thing. But you talked about Rapture and the idea of environmental storytelling, right? And again, I always want to like underline, and I have a feeling most of us can relate to this. This game, when it was released, was revolutionary, and it's still very good. The problem is obviously that tons of games have borrowed ideas from it and since done them better. So going back, it just feels a little jarring. And the thing that really struck me is I remembered Rapture as being the pinnacle of environmental storytelling, right? Like, oh my gosh, they built like this city, and it's using all this artistic inspiration from like traditional art, like you said, not just film. You know, this, it looks like fine art at times. And replaying it, what I was shocked was how dull I found the actual city. Like, I think the city's fine. You look out a window and it's always like the same stuff out in the ocean. It looks kind of bland. The architecture is fine. It's good at the beginning and I think kind of falls off. But really, the environmental storytelling in this game is just dead bodies. Like, that is what gives this game its entire environment. Most of what you see is dead bodies that have been like twisted or mangled and left to kind of like a thing happened here and now they're dead. That's the story of pretty much every room you walk into. And it's, I think, so I, the Sander, so there's an area that's Sander Cohen, who is this like theater performance artist / visual artist who is, has you take photos of dead bodies and who is effectively cast dead bodies in paper mache or something, or sculpting material.
Plaster
around his area. And that area still feels legit. Like it feels like the best part of the game because it's embracing what they're doing everywhere else, which is like, yeah, there's a reason for these bodies to be displayed in this very performative storytelling way. But then you go to other areas and it's like, okay, now the doctor likes to use bodies also as art, and like crucify them everywhere, or like, oh, now we're in like the town where like the proletariat rised up and they also like to use bodies as like warnings. And it's like, at a certain point I was like, man, I can't believe that I was like, I found this game like fun, because it really is just like mangled corpses all the way down.
They definitely lean on that too hard, but I think that you're also discounting the splicers, which are sort of the main enemies in the game. You often catch like fragments of dialogue from them that I think help to paint a picture of what Rapture is. And they're not, you can't necessarily, they're not reacting to things in the environment that you can see. So it gives this very fragmented, disorienting kind of vibe that I think they achieve a lot with that.
See, I would have listened to them more if their heads weren't made out of magnets that pulled my wrench right at their noggins.
Oh, they love getting hit by those wrenches, huh?
Yeah, they love getting hit by wrenches.
There's a disconnect, I feel like, between, I think, and this is true of all the BioShock games, of maybe less BioShock 2, which I haven't actually finished, but there's always been a disconnect.
It's
of
great,
like,
by the way.
It is very good.
BioShock 2 rules really the ending of BioShock 2. BioShock 1 is in conversation with the Fountainhead. BioShock 2 is in conversation with BioShock 1. Yes. And it's actually really interesting. Like,
I still really want to play it. But there's been a disconnect between like the storytelling and tone and all this stuff that they're doing and the gameplay of it. And maybe that's like, maybe that is the whiplash I was talking about earlier, where you think about sort of more modern prestige games, like the comparison I kept coming back to was Prey, which is unfair because Prey had, you know, 11 years of time of like this genre being sort of fleshed out and new discoveries being made. But Prey, I feel like you use the word slowly eases you in when talking about the intro to BioShock. I feel like that is more fair to describe a more sort of modern take on this game. There is something about just hopping right in and then all of a sudden having magic wizard powers to set shit on fire and shoot it with a Tommy gun that like always kind of felt, and honestly I like BioShock Infinite still to this day. Like, I still think it's a cool game that does like really like some of the best settings in a video game that has ever existed. But you cannot get over digging your fucking grinding blender claw into a dude's brain after like, oh wow, that's a really pretty cover of that Beach Boys song, to like, I just fucking split that man's cabeza in half. And I feel like BioShock kind of suffers from that.
I'm gonna set up Justin for the talking about the twist, because I got the transition.
Here we go.
This is the game that Clint Hawking, he's a very famous designer. He made Far Cry 2. He made Splinter Cell. He's working on Watch Dogs 3 right now. He also wrote a blog for a while. Wrote the essay on ludonarrative dissonance.
Oh, no.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about it. Ludonarrative dissonance.
Can we track when people stop listening to the podcast?
Ludonarrative dissonance, for everybody listening who wasn't reading blogs in 2007, was the hottest phrase of nerdy video game blogs in 2007. And the idea of this was that the ludo, that's like the play in this game, made sense. You control a dude who just slaughters everybody to achieve his goals, and the game is about Randian philosophy, which is just purely about self-interest. Great, they nailed it. The play matches like the theme of the game, but the narrative doesn't make sense, because the narrative is like, hey, you need to help Atlas, like do all these like nice things that he's asking you to do, like take care of his family, which is the least Randian thing possible. So dissonant, right?
Or is
it? But then ultra dissonant, because what is the twist, Justin?
The twist is that, seriously, if you haven't played BioShock, you should probably stop listening. It's kind of two twists on at the same time that are revealed to you. One being that your helper, the person who's been guiding you through the game, Atlas, is in actuality Frank Fontaine. who is a gangster, basically, who is in competition with Ryan for control of Rapture. Second is that you have been basically brainwashed into following the commands of anybody who uses a trigger phrase, which is "Would you kindly," which is something that you hear Atlas say a lot, and is used to sort of like keep you in order.
It's on the note, on the present, at the very beginning of the game, which I absolutely love. It's like my
favorite. That's a cool play. Yeah, on the airplane, you see it on a piece of paper, yeah. And you are the one who brings the airplane down. It's a cool touch. You are also Andrew Ryan's illegitimate son.
Also that.
which is another part of the twist.
And that, I guess that is kind of at the same moment. Yeah, like you kind of get that triptych of twists all hitting you at once. I think that, okay, so two things that are interesting about that. One, briefly, is that I think it really helped to ignite BioShock, because when it first came out, it was what you heard from so many people was like, you have to play it right now. Like, you can't let anybody spoil it for you. You have to play it right away. And I think it led to a bigger rush of like uptake of this new IP a lot sooner than it maybe would have gotten otherwise. Two, what I think is interesting about it, and maybe isn't saying as much as it could, but is definitely like raising the question, is drawing the parallel between you were basically like following marching orders and doing these atrocities without really thinking about it. You were murdering, I mean, dozens upon dozens of drug addicts without so much as blinking an eye. And you as the player were taking those actions because the game told you had to. And then in the moment, it's revealed that your character was also sort of doing the same thing. They were, you know, taking these actions and doing these terrible things because they were being mind controlled. I think that that is very interesting. If the point they were trying to get to, and maybe they were, was like, are you, when you play video games, how much are you questioning what you're being told to do? I think that that's very interesting and would have hit so much harder if that wasn't at the midpoint of the game, but rather the end. Because at the midpoint of the game, you get cured of the brainwashing, and then you're like, now I'm killing drug addicts for me.
That is a fair
now,
point.
Now, this one is all me. I'm doing this because I am a man chooses, a slave obeys, and this man wants to kill lots of drug addicts.
I mean, it's not at the midpoint. It is at the final act. It basically, like, there's
it's
maybe
closer
10
than you. It's to the earlier than you fucking remember, because the game is a slog from that point on. Like, once they drop all those on you, it's like, do you want to keep doing the same thing for another few hours? Okay, well, anyway, here's more of it. That should have been the end, we know, but we have to have a big giant boss fight at the end of it. And also, it's 2007, so games have to be 20 hours long. So here's the best we got. What did you guys think? I mean, how did it hit you? I mean, that's my take on it. I think it's interesting.
I agree.
But it would be more interesting at the end of the game rather than the midpoint.
So the point that Hawking made in this Lunar Narrative Dissonance essay, which I think is like pretty spot on, is for a game that is best remembered about its writing, it is weird and kind of frustrating that the twist is built on this kind of invisible contract with the player that you don't ever have control. Like yes, it makes for a good twist, but it's spotlighting arguably the biggest weakness of games, is which games like want to pretend to be about you having free control, but in reality they are like shaped and sculpted and linear to some degree by whatever the game designers intended for you to do.
But is that bad thing? Like, that's not a
I'm like mixed on it. I don't know if I agree with him entirely, but I think it is a little unusual in a game that is literally about free will, like about Randian things, to have that but then not say anything more with it. Like, the problem for me is it feels like it starts to say something and then doesn't finish it. I don't know what it's actually trying to say. It reminds me of Spec Ops The Line, which I know a lot of people love, but is a game I just despise, which does a similar thing of like, oh, you did all these terrible things, but it was you, the player, who chose to drop napalm on innocent civilians. And then it's like, but also, like, we got a multiplayer mode if you want to kill some more. It's like, yeah. Okay, like, you made this game, y'all. Like, What are you trying to actually tell me?
I think the message is also muddied by the Little Sisters, because
because
one of the main sort of, I don't know, I guess antagonists of the game, not really. So these little girls have been turned into harvesters of Adam, which is the drug that gives you superpowers in Rapture. Fair.
Yeah.
And they have these defenders that are big daddies, these big diving suit clad behemoths that just protect them. So if you kill the big daddy, you get the little sister. And the little sister, you can either kill the little girl, harvest, thank you, or rescue. If you harvest, you get more Adam, which is the drug that gives you powers. Or if you rescue, you get less Adam. But that is sort of blunted, because you have plenty of Adam if you rescue everybody. You never feel the pinch.
Like, you actually get better rewards. That's why it's broken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
to be fair, they don't tell you that the rewards are going to be better at the beginning.
It doesn't matter, man.
I read an interview with Ken Levine where he was talking about how he wanted it to be a bigger difference between the two, but 2K felt like you can't penalize people, like it's less fun if you know that you could be more powerful. And, you know, I don't agree with that. But anyway, the point is, you're making this moral choice, which I would argue is like very not much of a moral choice. Do you want to kill a little girl? I don't actually. Wait, she's squirming in your hand, begging for you not to kill her, and she looks like she's 6 years old. Do you want to kill her or no? No, okay, that's a no. It's not much of a moral choice. But even the fact that you're able to make it sort of blunts the what the rest of the game is talking about, because you are making this moral choice about this, but you aren't making the moral choice about everything else you're doing. And also, Atlas directly tells you, he doesn't say, would you kindly, fair, but Atlas tells you, like, you should harvest her, like, you should do this.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do. And then you don't do it. So it's like,
well, and then I feel Tenenbaum introducing, is there, right, telling you, like, you should save her.
There's a character who's playing basically the angel on your shoulder. Is there a version of this game? It feels, by the way, kind of weird to relitigate BioShock, because I was fucking head over heels in love with this game, and I still think it's one of the most impactful
games ever made.
Yes.
If you want to read some effusive writing about BioShock, Google the year 2007, and then look at your monitor will melt.
But is there a version of this game where after the twist, after the reveal, there could be more subtle sort of changes to the world and the way it looks and the way that you are able to interact with it that sort of reinforces the point? Like, even if it's something as simple as like the splicers not looking like these mutant zombies, but more like actual sort of people, and then like you have this trigger word in your brain that turns you into a killer psychopath. Now you actually kind of have to confront the reality of what you're doing. That's maybe a grim like take on what the game could be, but it I think would be a much more effective way of sort of getting its point across.
I think that's a big problem with BioShock replaying it, is I think after the twist there is very much, I don't know, I think that it is, in talking to people after this game was released, I think part of it was budget and scoping. Yeah. Like, they just didn't have the time. That's why the final boss is such garbo, because, like, they didn't have the time to, like, actually implement everything that they wanted to with it.
Yeah.
But I really think that after the twist, the game's like, now let's play some fucking video games. Like, there's a bad guy, there's a good guy, let's go fucking get him.
Yeah, I mean, this game began as Nazi Island. Like, that was, like, the origins of it. They spent so much time working on this game, but that by the time they had to ship, I think it was like, okay, y'all have had a lot of time to figure this out. On the stuff after Andrew Ryan and, like, how to do it a better way, I apologize. I don't remember which game designer came up with this, and I'll put it on Twitter once I can Google it after the show. But there was an idea of, like, how do you fix the ending? And a lot of people were talking about it back in 2007. And I think the big thing is, the reason the ending doesn't work in the current game is you kill Andrew Ryan, you're forced to do it, and then you have to like remove whatever like the thing is in your body that makes you controlled by Would You Kindly, right? But you're still listening to people. Like you now you just do what Tenenbaum says. Like you're effectively constantly just shifting masters.
Yeah. Game points out.
Yeah, which
does. Yeah, it says.
Yeah, and so that like that shift happens. The other shift that happens is until this point in the game, largely the story has taken place in the past. you are discovering everything that happened here. And it, everything that you're coming across is stuff that's, you know, the decisions were already made and you're learning about it through audio logs. And suddenly, once you become the star of Rapture, the game shifts to the present. And I just don't think, like, at the time they quite knew how they wanted to handle that in a shooter. Mm-hmm. Like, the audio log stopping a crutch. And then the third thing, so there are these bio chambers that revive you, right, throughout the whole game. Whenever you die, you can immediately be saved by a bio chamber, and it's like the way that you can
spam. Vita chamber. Like, yeah. it just fills up with the vitamins that all human beings are made of.
Yes. But you can do that to, like, just immediately spam Big Daddies to kill them. But at the end of this game, you effectively become a Big Daddy, right?
Yeah.
So the idea that I'd seen floating around was the way this game really should end is Frank Fontaine becomes you. You're a Big Daddy now, and Frank Fontaine now has the gene code, because the gene code of the Vita chambers are tied to you/Andrew Ryan, and that it would flip, that he would become the person who has the gene chambers. So suddenly the boss fight is you can kill Frank Fontaine, but there are infinite Frank Fontaines. So you are effectively trying to help the little girls get out of Rapture while dealing with, like, swarms of no longer drug dealer enemies. It's just Frank Fontaine, but he's endless. And the only
but that
way
would
to,
look very goofy. Come on.
That'd be fucking radical.
It'd be rad. And then the way that you have to kill him, because the only way to stop this would be to flood all of Rapture. Because that would be literally the only way that you can stop it, which would be him, the ending, like the scene that the designer said would be like underwater, him dying from drowning, and then immediately a Vita chamber lighting up and him being thrown back into the ocean and dying from drowning just over and over
That'd
and over
into
funny. Eternity. Yeah, I mean, I like that to me feels, it's a way of not doing what the game does in actuality, which is you literally fight the book cover for Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
Which is also the wild.
I think that we are all cognizant of this, but I want to, like, put a point out. Like, I don't want us to come across as we're coming back and turning our noses up at what BioShock is, because you have to remember how much it was, how far they were pushing against what video games were at that point. Like, I think there is so much of a broader palette to choose from when you're making a video game in 2020 versus 2007, just in terms of, like, what video games are, what players will accept, the vocabulary that we have with games, you know, like the idea of games that are just environmental storytelling, just exploring a world and gaining the story. Like, I think that I don't want it to come across as we're, like, now turning a critical eye and saying, like, yeah, BioShock was actually crap the entire time, because I just think it's more interesting to look at it back in that light. But it's not I don't think that any of this is necessarily a criticism of the BioShock that is, because I think it's still really important.
It's criticism in the truest word, right? Like, that's what's good about this game, is it gives you a lot to actually critique. There's actually stuff to talk about.
And I also make the comparisons of, like, last week when we were talking about Call of Duty, like, I think it's similar in the sense of, like, Call of Duty defined a generation of that sort of game. And BioShock did the same exact thing. Like, games that are still coming out today are absolutely directly inspired by BioShock. Like, I Dishonored is a franchise that I absolutely adore, and I fully see so much BioShock in Dishonored.
Absolutely.
But it's obviously an evolution of this model where the gameplay is, like, I think a lot better. Story, you could argue.
There's DNA there too. I know, like, Sean Elliott, for example, was on BioShock.
Right. And there's Looking Glass team members there's that a lot of worked people. On. Yeah, so there's like a lot of connection there. But I mean, that's the thing to go back
also,
to. This is the progenitor for a lot of that stuff.
But I feel like I've been the most critical of all, which is, you know, whatever. I feel like the point that would be unfair to make here is that the thing that maybe surprised me the most is how much fucking fun just the combat is. Which, like, yeah,
I want to talk about mechanics, like, very briefly.
Ludonarrative dissonance is one thing, but, like, that using your shocking power and then smashing somebody with a wrench is still the hottest shit. You can give me the same thing happened this time as what happens every time, which is, like, here's your slug shotgun, here's your Tommy gun, here's your grenade launcher, and it's like, fuck it, fuck that, get out of here. I want those tonics that give me extra wrench power,
yeah,
and I want to hit somebody with an electrobolt and stun them and then whap them over the head with my wrench and then, like, move on. And it still feels good. I do it to flying robots, even when it doesn't make sense. I'm, like, trying to kill a bat with a tennis racket. Like, it is... It still feels so fucking good. And I was surprised by that because I the first 15 minutes, I was like, God, all this gameplay is getting in the way of all the great storytelling that I remember. And then it was like, give me some more drug dealers to just zap and smash, baby.
Yeah.
There is also, I really like the ability to turn turrets and security cameras to you, to your side, because there's very little more satisfying than, like, a splicer running at you, and it's just like, oh yeah, cool. Me, my army of flying gunbots. They follow me around everywhere and handle my light work. Except that eventually you realize that if you have to hack one more thing, you will cry. And I just started hitting them with a wrench because I couldn't hack more.
Yeah, that was another thing they fixed in Bioshock 2. Bioshock 2 has a much better, faster hacking system. I would say a lot of the gameplay mechanics, which are still okay, get dramatically better in Bioshock 2. And also just a plug for Bioshock Minerva's Den, which is probably the best standalone Bioshock story that's ever been told, maybe. It's very, very good.
I just wanted to provide a little more context to, wow, things have changed. In 2007, Bioshock won the Game of the Year award at the Spike Video Game Awards. They announced this with a woman, a nude model in body paint with Bioshock written on it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Ken Levine was unable to accept the award because members of Gamecock, the studio Gamecock, stormed the stage, and he was never able to accept the award.
A little time capsule you have presented us with, Chris Plant.
2007 was wild.
Yeah.
What a wild time.
It was time.
That was a time. We have had a time talking about Bioshock, but we're not done with the show. There's so much more show to come. So stick around with us, and we'll be right back. And we're back. That was a great commercial.
Hi, my name is Greg. I don't want to brag, but I'm a senior vice president at 2K Games, and we're working on Bioshock 3, which is a funny title because it's not the third Bioshock. We know, we've heard from the fans, and we're working on that. But anyway, all
it seems
we
like
do
an easy,
know,
Greg, it seems like an easy fix. It
no,
seems like you just changed the number.
We've talked with marketing, and the numbers prove out that Bioshock 3 is it's a trilogy. Well, not really a trilogy because there are more games than 3. It's something we're working on. Anyway, we know that Elon Musk is very cool with the kids these days, with the Joe Rogans and the 420s and the babies. Mm-hmm. So we thought that we would want the next Andrew Ryan to be an Elon Musk type. But that's basically all we have. So we were hoping that you, the besties, which we don't know much about you other than that you're the best, that you might have some ideas about the setting of this new Bioshock.
You've been working on this game for a while, and that's all you've come up with. You don't have any, like, artists, or nobody's making the guns yet.
Titles are the hardest part, we believe.
Okay. That seems weird.
Well, it's funny you say an Elon Musk type that's like, but the new Andrew Ryan is an Elon Musk type. Like, I don't know that it was much of a reach there. I think he probably started out pretty damn close.
We take the Austin Powers to Austin Powers 2 kind of road, which is kind of the same game.
Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Right. That's fun.
Okay. Let me hit you guys. Let me just fire it off. Okay. This time, Rapture, it's still Rapture. But this time, Rapture is at a water park.
Okay.
So you still have the wet element, but what am I adding with this? Well, one, you get to ride all the slides as much as you want because everybody else is dead. That's huge. No lines. People love it.
Cool.
Secondly, it's wet like Rapture. That will feel familiar. Thirdly, though, sexy, beautiful people in sun-drenched setting, bikinis, speedos.
I thought they were dead.
Hunky guys and gals. I mean, really filling out those suits. You know what I mean? Sex sells. And this is going to be the sexiest Bioshock yet. Because every splicer looks sexy.
Like, so hot. I mean,
they look
fuck.
Sexy. Yeah. And like the test, the sort of like Elon Musk stand in is like, he looks sexy too. Like this everybody's like so really good. Hot.
We so really sexy. Respect a creative vision. And like, listen, we don't give notes per se, but we're just wondering if maybe to get it a little more Tesla, these sexy people are actually just sexy cars, kind of like the movie Cars, which made a lot of money for Disney.
Can they be cars with sick yabos and ding dongs?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. See, all this right, is the type right, of right. cooperation that we're looking for.
Let me hit you with this. There's a lot of piranhas at this water park. It's chock-a-block full of piranhas. It's they're having trouble finding room to spawn or whatever because there's just like so many piranhas in the water. And so the government tries to shut down Elon Musk's water park. Sorry, Elon Musk type. We need another name for him. Devin Sint. And Devin Stink has this water park that's full of piranhas. The government shuts him down. And he starts yelling as loud as he can, like, the government can't shut down my piranha-filled water park. It's totally safe. This sucks. This is... check out all my sick cars with all the sexy body parts and yabos and ding-dongs on them. This is illegal.
Now,
wouldn't it have been sweet in the first Bioshock is every time he shot a wall, there was a huge gush of water filled with piranhas just pouring onto the enemies.
Blasting onto you.
This is just a kind of question for clarification. These piranhas... are they also little cars with yabos and ding-dongs?
Yeah, that should go without saying, yeah, if you've been paying attention to the pitch.
And for the record, you can fuck the piranhas as well.
If you
you need a perk to be able to do it.
And it gets you extra health.
Got it. Well, this sounds really interesting. We're just so happy that you could make time, and we will think about it. And I just want to be honest with you, we're meeting with lots of other podcasts, kind of funny, beyond. We think there's a lot of good ideas out there, so we'll get back to you in the next 3 to 4 years.
Well, just real quick, I do know that y'all like it when it's based on book. And you do a lot of Ayn Rand. I thought we'd go a different way. And this time, sort of the main sort of literary influence will be Super Fudge. So we're going to tackle Elon through the lens of Super Fudge. You have no response to that. It's so good. Print it, baby.
Do we have any reader mail?
We do. Oh, hi, everybody.
We have lots
I'm back.
Of questions.
Oh, hi, Chris. Hi, welcome back. You missed a really
it.
Funny
Rich.
Segment. Yeah.
Yeah? Cool. Hey, here's some reader mail. So Bioshock, the trilogy is coming out on Nintendo Switch, like at the end of the month.
Ooh.
So both Kathleen and Sackstab on Twitter, want to know, you know, what are our feelings on Bioshock versus Bioshock Infinite, or really, you know, is it worth going back and revisiting these three games in the year 2020?
I think it definitely is. I agree. As we were just talking about, Bioshock is still fun, but I also think a ton of people did not play Bioshock 2. I really think it was like very unheralded. I don't actually know if it's in the pack, but if Minerva's Den is in the pack, damn, play Minerva's Den.
I think it is. I think for me, it was you played it as big, you're a big daddy in Bioshock 2, right?
Yes.
And the big daddy part in Bioshock 1 was my least favorite part of Bioshock 1. I literally think that is the hang up I've always had with Bioshock 2.
Yeah, but you, I guess it plays and controls completely differently. And I know.
It's a preposterous distinction, but that is what like turned me off of it. And it's been like a completely arbitrary like roadblock for me.
Yeah. So I would definitely recommend it. I think play the beginning of Bioshock Infinite. I don't think the rest of the game holds as much water, but that's just me personally.
You effectively get it for free.
You know what? I haven't returned to Infinite.
Yeah?
I haven't returned to Infinite since the beginning. I will echo what Russ said about Bioshock 2. I think it's great. I mean, honestly, really, really genuinely great. Infinite, it completely slipped out of my... I feel like I should almost return to it because it has completely evacuated my mental space.
Yeah. I think if I would be curious to return to it coming at it from the mindset that it's not going to be the greatest story ever told. Like sure. if I approach mm-hmm. it from that perspective and I just treat it as like a sort of roller coaster with like really, really, really cool set pieces and like kind of neat sci-fi ideas, then
talk about impossible expectations.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah.
I think it's also a lot of the things that I disliked about Infinite were in BioShock, but just not as visible to me. So like the thing that really bothered me about Infinite is the both sidesism, which is like, you're killing these racist, you know, ghouls. But then later in the game, it's like, yeah, but also the revolutionaries, they're not so hot either, right?
Yeah.
And I was surprised, and I didn't remember this with BioShock 1, that, like, it's weird. It's a critique of these objectivists, but then the plot is also like, yeah, but the people who clean the toilet, they're going to come and kill you all, and they're also just greedy, you know, monsters with avarice, and it's like, ah. The whole side of them is it's weak, but yes, these games are fun even if you ignore or forgive or, you know, make do with the politics in them. Another question from CJ. For me, the City of Rapture is one of the most memorable settings in video games. The sunken Randian dystopia is equal parts unsettling and awe-inspiring. The setting makes a great game incredible. What are your absolute favorite settings in video games?
The Mushroom Kingdom.
Oh my gosh.
So much range. I think it's
fantastical or real
I think
world?
Either is fine.
May just be recency bias, but Midgar is still so like crystallized in my mind as being like a just a really fucking solid place that a video game takes. Like everything ties back into Midgar and the tone of that game and everything that they are trying to do is encapsulated in this one huge city, and I think that that's like kind of incredible.
I've got kind of a deep cut, but it actually connects to this game and what we've been talking about, and it is Shalebridge Cradle in Thief Deadly Shadows. Shalebridge Cradle, it was an orphanage in this Thief game, which is really good. Definitely go back and play it. The level was designed by Jordan Thomas, who worked on a lot of these games.
All of them.
all of them, essentially. Games, yeah. One of the scary, like, freakiest levels I've ever played. There's almost no combat in it, but really spectacular. It is towards the end of Thief Deadly Shadows, which is still a good game. I don't know how the entire thing holds up, but it has stuck with me ever since I played it, and really fantastic level.
Justin, how about you?
This is maybe slightly outside the scope of what we're talking about here, but New York as represented by Spider-Man games is one that like I go back to a lot just to sort of like be in the environment. I think especially the newest one, but like you can go back to a lot of the different open world Spider-Man games. I think that this new one does it the best, obviously, but I really love being in New York, as stupid as that sounds, as somebody who grew up in West Virginia. Like, it's some place I really like idealize as sort of like the center of everything, and being able to like virtually go there in a Spider-Man game was like a big deal for me. And so it's one that like I still kind of like return to and check out.
Yeah, for me, all the Forza Horizon games, they're like my favorite open worlds. Kind of similar to Just Cause, but they're I guess the inversion of what you're talking about, Justin. Those are my vacation escapes, especially while living in New York. It's like, oh, here's just big, big open spaces that you can tear through at high speeds.
I was wrong because I panicked and I wanted a good answer. Mine is for sure Inaba in Persona 4 Golden. Inaba, I want to live there. I want to summer there.
I got one more question. This one's from Kyle. Now that you're looking back on 2007 with hindsight, is there anything you prefer about gaming back then when compared to 2020? I definitely miss the immediacy of playing games as soon as you put the disc in, as opposed to large and lengthy day one installs.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, I feel like pre-downloads, I feel like any game that comes out these days that, like, I'm excited about is very easy to pre-download. I feel like I have not had to do that wait in a long, long time.
But I do, the thing that, like, doesn't really happen as much anymore was, that was kind of the beginning of the era of indie games, like, especially console indie games. And I remember there were so few of them that I would get so jazzed about stuff like Summer of Arcade and like these big blocks of like indie releases. That doesn't happen anymore. And I don't think it's because the games are worse. I just think that they're way more frequent. So there isn't this like spike of like, wow, I've been waiting a year for this thing that's finally going to come out of like a random indie game that I'd never played before. So
y'all, I saw everything there was to see in three games this month. Portal, Modern Warfare, Bioshock. It rules to be able to complete a video game like a book and be like, that was it. I got what they wanted me to get out of this and I enjoyed it and I don't have like another 100 hours of collecting various things in an open world to get a mission that I know I won't care about. Obviously, that's like a place of privilege. There's so much value in games at this point. Value in the sense that like you can drop $60 or nothing and play forever. But y'all, it was so cool to like just enjoy a full artistic vision under 10 to 12 hours.
Speaking of which, when are we gonna play Assassin's Creed?
Because
2 weeks from now. I'm pumped.
Saving that for
I think that it was easier for games to sort of surprise you in 2007. I think that like that we sort of overanalyze every detail of games and pick them apart a lot more than in 2007. I think that there were more surprises. But I'd be happy with just video games coming out, honestly. I would just miss video games generally.
That would be pretty cool, speaking.
If there was video games. Next week, this fight that we have begun will finally be finished by us. We're going to finish the fight. The final Halo game. Everybody misses this franchise. Finish the fight. Halo 3. We're going back to finish what we started with Chief, Reggie, Cordy, the whole gang. taking the Flood right out of this big old loop we call Halo. So we hope that you'll join us for that adventure if you,
How can we play it? Is there an easy way to play Halo 3?
On Xbox. I don't believe Halo 3 is on PC yet. I believe they're only up to Halo 1, 2, and Reach.
So it's on...
Is that a joke? Did they just put it out on... Please, just put it out. Why? We're going for Halo 3 on PC? Is that real? It's real. Just put it out.
But basically, it'll
let
run.
People play.
It'll run on an Xbox One.
That was my
anniversary edition.
Yeah,
we'll play with a mouse and keyboard, like it was intended to be played on the Macintosh computer. So check that out. If you want to share some thoughts about that franchise, mail@besties.fan is our email address. Besties.fan is also a link you can share if you want to share the show with folks. It goes right to Spotify, where you can follow and listen for free, exclusively there, which you know already because you're listening to us. But we hope that you will maybe share the show with a friend.
You can do
this
it.
Week. This is a fun...
Do it on Twitter. And follow us on Twitter. At the Besties Pod. Yeah. If you wanted to join our mailing list, it is the pinned tweet right there. You will be the first to know what other games we'll be covering soon. Things like Halo 3... And Assassin's Creed, and
play some of Assassin's Creed first, then stop, play Halo 3, and then go back for the Assassin's Creed. I think I might go that way. Just to
let
break
me know
up
if you get it running.
Assassin's Creed I'm playing.
I have not gotten Assassin's Creed to run on my PC yet, so that's
cool.
Yeah,
too many buildings.
Oh, cool. No, shoot. We'll have to play something else.
We should compare notes about this. I tell you. Real quick, okay, super quick. I do want to say before, because I know this is the end of the show. The Bioshock remaster is dog shit. And I know that I'm 4 years late to that conversation. It sucks. I had to play the original version, which still looks great, by the way. On modern PCs, although it really Bioshock 2007. Actually, Ken Levine came up on my screen and says, "Your monitor is so fucking wide, Justin." I said, "I know, Ken." He said, "I never intended for this. This is not my vision. It's so wide.
There's a boom mic in the show.
Ken is standing to the side like, more corpses.
No, we didn't talk about Jeff Keighley being in the remaster.
Okay, there's a lot. So maybe sad. We'll do a second episode on this.
Remaster's really bad. I had so many problems I couldn't get it to run. It crashes all the time. Everybody on the internet hates it. Thank you for listening. That is the end of the show. Be sure to join us again next time for the Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
is a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!